from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made through obituaries and cards pasted on an office wall at a local homeless shelter and community center. Some of the messages and photos are worn, stained, and crinkly with age. Others have vibrant colors and are more recent. The hundreds of posts represent the lives of people in our community who died when they were homeless or who had been homeless at some point in their lives. People like Woodrow Pugh, a veteran who was known as Papa Smurf to his friends. Pugh died in his sleep at the House of Mercy at the age of 54. A professor at Nazareth College saw this wall at the House of Mercy and felt moved to learn more. After a series of interviews, he wrote a report called Homelessness as Death Sentence. His findings revealed that the average life expectancy of homeless men and women in the Rochester area is more than 2 decades shorter than that of men and women who are not homeless. And homeless women live shorter lives than men who are homeless. This hour, we'll discuss those findings in detail with Professor Harry Murray, a sociology professor at Nazareth College and the author of that report. He says homelessness is an extended death sentence and the community has a moral obligation to end it. Professor Murray, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
Also here is Sister Grace Miller, founder of the House of Mercy, and it's nice to have you back, Sister Grace.
Well, thank you very much.
How are things going at the
House of Mercy? Oh, busy. We're very busy there. You know, we have a homeless shelter with 82 beds. And, of course, many more people coming. But we're happy to have it. Our homeless are very happy there. They've got actually have beds to sleep on.
And what do you do for Thanksgiving?
Well, Thanksgiving, we're giving out turkeys the day before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And on Thanksgiving Day, we'll be having meals at the House of Mercy, and we'll be sending meals out to people who are homebound. So it'll be a busy time.
I want to start by asking about some of those obituaries, cards, and everything we see pasted on that office wall. What's that about? Tell us why you wanted to do that.
Well, you know, when I opened up the House of Mercy in 1985, it was really to help lift people up out of poverty. And so we started, but immediately I was shocked with the number of people who were dying. And, you know, we came to know the people very well because at the House of Mercy, we're like a community of people, and people from the neighborhood came in, and people who are alone would come and spend the day with us and socialize with us. So then they came in saying someone in their family had died. They didn't know what to do, so we immediately got into the burial ministry. But what shocked me was how quickly, how fast they were dying. It was one after the other after the other. We would start grieving for one we knew, and then someone else would die, and we barely had time to grieve. So in 2 weeks, we had like 5 burials, and in 3 months, we had 25 funerals. And it was just so heavy and so hard. So, you know, we knew our people very well, the ones we were having the funeral services for. And we wanted to remember them. And so I started to hang their obituaries on the wall. And first there were 5, then 10, and it multiplied quickly. And soon over the years, my walls were covered with the obituaries, and sometimes 4 deep, you know. And it shocked me to see how many were dying so quickly. And I knew that our homeless were dying young. But I didn't know the depth of it, you know. I didn't do the study, and Harry Murray did the study, which I'm really grateful for, because he's bringing out, you know, the shortness of homeless people's lives, which really hurts. And when he presented his study to us and said that homelessness is a death sentence, you know, even though I knew our homeless died younger, it was shocking.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same way. And for any listener who thinks, well, of course, homeless would die younger or not live longer, Sister Grace is telling you it was shocking even to her.
Yes.
That of course, we understand that people who are homeless are going to die earlier in their lives without significant help and intervention. But just the disparities were staggering to me. We're going to get into those numbers in a moment. I'd ask Professor Murray to tell us, you know, the roots of how this story began, and tell us more about when you saw those images and what came to mind for you.
Well, I started working with folks who were homeless in around 1977 in Syracuse at a place called Unity Kitchen, and I was struck, as Sister Grace was, by how young people were dying. I mean, people weren't dying in their 90s or 80s or rarely even in their 70s or 60s. It was people dying much more often in their 50s and 40s and 30s and even 20s. And, you know, dying of all kinds of causes, dying of AIDS, dying of tuberculosis, being victims in hit-and-run accidents. People spent more time walking the streets, and a number of folks that I knew were killed in hit-and-run accidents, victims of violence, heart attacks, all kinds of causes. But the one thing I knew was these folks were just dying way too young. And so, but not being a very good sociologist, I hadn't kept a record of all the folks I knew who had died. And so when I walked into Sister Grace's office, my sociologist mind said, data, we actually have a record here of how many people who have been dying over the last almost 30 years, and we can figure out what their ages were and what the average age of death was. So it was, in some ways, it seemed almost sacrilegious because this was a memorial wall, and I was converting it into numbers and quantifying things, and yet sometimes putting things into numbers is a way to tell a story and tell the story of people's lives and of the situations which lead to early death.
I agree with you entirely on this. I am sensitive to the idea that sometimes when we talk about crime or people who've been victimized in various ways, we rely too much on numbers and we forget the deeply personal and difficult stories that happen. But this was an opportunity for you to put hard numbers to help us see just how stark things are. And for me, that's what this report did. Mm-hmm. It took these personal stories and you kind of wove them together to say, look at this disparity and what are we doing here? So let's talk about some of the numbers here. The average age at death, and how many people, Harry?
It was actually 193.
Average age at death, 52.4 years. Compared to life expectancies in the 14621 zip code, in which the House of Mercy was located for just about the entirety of the study, the life expectancy in that zip code is 73.6. So you're living 21 years shorter if you are homeless in that zip code. But also Monroe County as a whole, 78 years. And so 52 and 78, you want to talk even easy numbers. If you are homeless or have been homeless, you live a life two-thirds the length of a person who has never been homeless. That is amazing. I mean, that is 33% loss in expected lifespan.
And that shocked me a bit, but I knew that it was going to be a matter of decades, not just months or years. And I think, to me, it's something that instills a great deal of guilt, because I knew I've known a lot of these people, and I can think of instances where I think if I had done something, I might have saved someone's life. Just to tell another couple of stories from St. Joseph's House. Woman named Cassandra, who was a Gulf War veteran and one of the most amazing people I've ever met, very, very insightful. She had a number of health problems, actually got an apartment, and she was someone who almost always came to St. Joseph's House on Saturdays. I run the Saturday meal there. I've been doing that for 30 years now. And if she wasn't there, she would usually call up and harass me. And there were a couple of weeks where I didn't hear from her at all, and I didn't do anything. And then it turns out that she had died in her apartment, and it took 2 weeks for somebody to discover her. And I still wonder if I had gone over to visit, whether I might have found her while she was still alive. I think of another guy named Bob, who went into the hospital And I went to visit him a number of times, but the thing that I didn't do was to stop at the nurse's station and check in with them, which I've since discovered that I really needed to do that. I'm kind of a shy person. And one of the things that I've found over the years in working with folks who are homeless in hospitals is if you're going to visit them, you should check in at the nurse's station, even though through HIPAA laws you probably might not be able to tell you anything, but the fact that someone is visiting and keeping an eye, I think really does. Many nurses would disagree with me here, but it really affects the level of care that people have. I was pretty shocked when he died, but there's still in the back of my mind that if I had gone that extra step and kind of checked in so that people knew that I was visiting, would it have made a difference?
Sister Grace, when people pass away at the House of Mercy, is it often happening sort of in their sleep for unexplained reasons, or do you tend to know?
No, well, I have to agree with Harry. One of the things that has really struck me is in homelessness at the House of Mercy, there is a community. And the homeless do look out for one another. And if someone is ill or is having a stroke or a seizure, someone will call attention to it immediately, and their lives are saved. What I've seen, which really bothers me, and we talk a great deal about homeless moving into apartments or moving on, which is what we do. But there's a problem here because many of our homeless, cannot live in apartments right away. They haven't lived in apartments for years, and to move into an apartment, they're not ready for it. But what has happened in some who were in apartments or even put in hotels, while they were there, they had a stroke or a seizure, and no one was there to take care of them or to let anyone know.
So sometimes it's a medical emergency that, with more attention, a life could have been saved.
Exactly. I know 5 people who were in apartments or in hotels, and this happened to them. They died while they were there. And it hurts me because I think if they had been with us or in a shelter, someone would have seen what was happening, and their lives would have been saved.
I want to read some numbers to you as well. When it comes to the average life expectancy for people who are homeless at the House of Mercy, again, 52.4 years, according to the study of almost 200 people who had passed away, the study performed by Professor Murray, 52.4 years as a life expectancy is a greater life expectancy than only 6 countries in the world. And here are those numbers. The Ivory Coast life expectancy, 51.9 years. Chad, 51.9 years. Central African Republic, 51.5 years. Sierra Leone, 51.3 years. Lesotho, 50.1 years. And Swaziland, 48.9 years. Those are the life expectancies of the only 6 countries in the world that had lower life expectancies than people who are homeless at the House of Mercy. Sister Grace, I mean, what is the first takeaway for you then? Because I know you knew it was going to be an issue, but you didn't know it was going to be this severe. What does it say to you, and what needs to be done?
Well, it says that people in the community, I'm talking about a government, I'm talking about business, I'm talking about churches, all really need to come forth and help our homeless get on their feet. I find that there are so many judgments made about homeless, which are not true. You know, you hear the statement that homeless people want to be homeless, they want to live that way, but that is not true. And what I really would like is for people in the community to come to the House of Mercy or St. Joe's and sit down and talk with a homeless person. Then they would find exactly what's going on in their lives. Just recently, you know, we had Pope Francis called the World Day of the Poor, the first World Day of the Poor, and we commemorated it all week long. And what he is saying that those who have should really come face to face with those who do not have. You know, that there needs to be this encounter so that, you know, people won't be making this judgment, so but will be, it'll be heart-to-heart talk, and people will get better understand and know a homeless person in their lives and how and why they became homeless. I see so many judgments being made about homeless that are not true. Many of their stories are heartbreaking. And sometimes I'll sit there and I'll cry and I'll listen to them. And I just wish that more people in the community could see what we see and hear what we hear and come forth and really help our people. What I want to see is our homeless living longer lives. And what can the community do to help our homeless live longer lives? It's going to take a lot of effort on people out in the community, but I think they need to come forth and really sit down and talk and listen to our homeless. You have the Woodrow Pugh, the story there. Woodrow was homeless, and he came to the House of Mercy as a homeless person. And then we found an apartment for him, which is what we usually do. But every night he kept coming back to the House of Mercy because he missed the camaraderie, the community, you know, the people that were there. And so we let him come back. And then one morning he didn't wake up. And he died in the House of Mercy. It was beautiful to see the street people and his friends just come in and pay tribute to him. And he was in his 50s, and the mother of his children, she was in her 50s. And we held the funeral for him. And so she came to the funeral, and there's a place for remarks, and she stood up and she says, "My biggest worry about Woody," that's his nickname, was that he would die all alone on the streets with nobody there to help him. And she said, "But I can't tell you how happy I am that when he died in the House of Mercy, surrounded by friends." You know, so it brought her great relief and peace, knowing that he didn't die outside, but that he was surrounded by people who loved him and cared for him. And we held the funeral for him because we loved him, we cared for him. And he came to the House of Mercy because he knew that we loved him and cared for him. And that's really what homeless need, to know that they are cared for, they're loved, and we have to win their trust. Once they know that, once we win over their trust, they'll tell us anything. And it's easier to work with them and have them move on in their lives, you know, where they want to move on and where they want to be.
But he was only 54.
I know. And that's the tragic part of it. He had diabetes, and many of them have diabetes, and that's a hard illness to conquer. But we're there for them to help them, you know, live on and to see the doctors when they need to see doctors. We help them to keep doctor appointments. If they don't keep the doctor appointments, that's going to be difficult for them. Some don't want to go to hospitals when they feel ill, but we make them go to hospitals so that they can really be taken care of. And then they'll come back. We make sure they take their medications. And as long as as long as they know that people care for them, they'll care for themselves more.
Is there a single first step towards expanding lifespans for people who are homeless that you see that's within reach right now?
Sister Well, Grace? You know, getting them to hospitals immediately.
But how do we do that?
Pardon me?
How do you do that?
We take them or call the ambulance, call 911. And many times we have to urge them to go to the hospitals because many of them don't want to go. I think many of them are giving up on their lives, and that's what I don't like to see. I want to encourage people to take care of themselves and know that we care for them and that they can have a longer life expectancy if there are people there to care for them and really want to see this happen to them. I just think we need to reach out more to the homeless, to let them know we really care about them. Many of them think nobody cares. And I think many come to the House of Mercy because they know we do care. And we're going to make sure they get what they need. You know, whether it's food, whether it's medication, we make sure they take the medication while they're there. Once they move into apartments or move on, we're not too sure they're taking their medication. And I think that's part of the problem, too. They need people to encourage them to care for themselves. And above all, they need to know that we love them, we care for them, and we want them to live on, and we'll help them to find places to live. And some of our homeless will never leave the House of Mercy. Some have mental issues, and they'll be with us and we'll keep them because there's really no place else for them. We're not going to put anyone out who really needs a place to stay or who can't carry on for themselves. We call the mental institutions in Rochester, in Monroe County, even in our country, they're not helping the homeless. They're not helping us the way they should. We need help from mental institutions.
Here in Monroe County, too?
Yes, in Monroe County. And we're not getting the help that we need.
Well, what are they doing or not doing then, Sister Grace?
Well, what they do from the hospital is they send homeless people to us from hospitals. And some of them should really be put in maybe not rehab centers, but really maybe need to be institutionalized. We don't like to institutionalize people, but some people need to be institutionalized or need better living facilities. The House of Mercy is not set up to take care of mentally ill people, but we'll take them and we'll hold on to them until they can get the help they need. And if they can't get the help they need, we still will hold on to them. They're being sent to us. I mean, police bring homeless people to us, hospitals send homeless people to us, and we ask the hospitals to hold on to them or to find the right place for them. But that's not happening. And I'm not going to blame the hospitals, but there need to be the mental institutions in Rochester need to be better equipped to handle the mentally ill people in our society.
Do they not have space?
That's part of the problem. They don't have space. But if they don't have space, the Monroe County has to get busy and prepare more spaces for them. I think the county has to step forward and put money towards the poor, the homeless, those who are on welfare, the child protective services. More money needs to be put into helping our people who are poor and destitute. And I'm not going to accept the statement that the county does not have the money.
What is your relationship like with the current county leadership on that issue?
We're not getting too far. We've had several meetings, but no results, and we want more meetings with them, and I hope that, they'll happen, and we will get the results. But in terms of do we get immediate satisfaction or do we get immediate help from the county, the answer is no.
I suspect the Denolfo administration, and I don't want to speak for them, and I want to be as fair as I can to them, but I suspect they would say that they care very much about this issue, that they do everything they can within the current budget and the constraints, and that they do feel that there are certain limits. And you said you're not going to accept they say that there's not money there.
No, well, they have what they call the sanctions after hours. If a homeless person is homeless, they can call after hours and be placed. Well, if they have tried to get on welfare and they didn't follow through on some demand, like turning in a document, turning in a paper, or not following up on the demands of the welfare system, then they're sanctioned. They can be sanctioned for 45 days, 190 days. What we want the county to do is to stop those sanctions, because a homeless person cannot be placed in some of the shelters because they've been sanctioned. They have what they call hospitality beds, but they're not all filled. Some of the shelters have hospitality beds that are empty. But we have homeless, they really should be in those hospitality beds and can't get in if they've been sanctioned. Or I should say in the shelter if they've been sanctioned. Monroe County needs more beds for the homeless in more shelters. And Monroe County is saying that they do have sufficient beds and sufficient shelters. But we're finding the opposite to be true.
And you've said you've tried to meet with the administration, and sometimes you can meet with them, but you feel like you don't get very far.
We've had two or three meetings with them, and so far we haven't gotten anywhere. So we actually tried to meet with them on the burial issue, because since 2006, when the monies for indigent burials was cut, our people have been coming to us really agonizing over the fact that they don't have enough money to bury their loved ones. And we were going to the county for that issue, plus the issue of homelessness and all the other issues that we have. There's a lot more that needs to be done in our community, and we really want to sit down with them. And we want them to help us work out these problems. But if we meet with them and meet with them and meet with them and nothing happens, then we're left alone with the problem. And I'm saying that Monroe County really needs to reach out and, you know, find the money. The money is there. It's where they put the money, you know, to help the homeless and the poor in our city. Now, you know very well that Rochester is one of the poorest cities, and child poverty is number one here in Monroe County, in the city. Well, why is that happening here in a city, in a county that has wealth? I mean, there's money in Rochester, and the money needs to be put towards the poor to help lift the poor, lift them up out of their poverty, and I don't see that happening.
I'm curious to also know your relationship with the city government and how you feel their role should be here.
Well, the city did give us, through the state, gave us $50,000 towards our new shelter, which was a help. But I think the city can do more, too.
Have you met with them?
Yes. When the homeless were put out of the Civic Center garage, we did meet with the city. We also tried to meet with the county. We were unsuccessful in meeting with the county. We did meet with the city. The reason why we have the new House of Mercy, the bigger House of Mercy now, is because we begged the county to find a home for the homeless that they were putting out of the garage, and we couldn't meet with them. And so we feel we took on their responsibility in taking care of the homeless that were put out of the garage. We would have stayed at Hudson Avenue. But when we saw that we didn't have enough room for the homeless in Hudson Avenue and in the garage, then we decided we were going to find a place. And it was through the generosity of people in the community, people who were donating to us and businessmen who liked what we were doing, who helped us get this new building. And so we've got the new building mostly because the county didn't come forth and put them in a building. Or find a building for them.
Let me ask Professor Murray, who wrote this report. The report is Homelessness as Death Sentence, Findings from the House of Murray. House of Mercy.
Not at all.
The House of Mercy. And Harry took a look at the lifespans of nearly 200 people who had died either at the House of Mercy or having been homeless and sort of passed through the House of Mercy, and found that the average lifespan is around 52 years. Well, the average lifespan in Monroe County is 78 years. So just a huge disparity for lifespan for people who are or have been homeless. And Professor Murray, what is the first takeaway for you in terms of what can be done next to start to change that?
Well, I think there are a lot of things that need to be done next. One thing is looking at that disparity between men and women, because the average age of homeless women from the House of Mercy sample was only 42 years, which is nearly just a little over half the life expectancy of women in Monroe County.
Forgive me here because we haven't hit this number yet, but this is stunning to me because what you always hear is that men not only don't live as long as women, but, you know, single men don't live as long because they don't have, you know, responsible partners in their lives helping them make better decisions, to go to a doctor when you might be sick, to get that medication, to take that medication. And yet here you are with this study from Professor Murray finding that the average age of death for men who are homeless, 54.9 years, for women only 42.2 years. Is that just a small sample size and you think that would change with a larger sample, or is there something going on here?
Well, it's hard to say at this point. There were only 38 women in the sample. But that lower age did hold up even as the numbers of women grew. The House of Mercy sample both men and women is probably not totally representative of homeless people in Rochester as a whole. We don't have any. I did make some comparisons with a couple of the point in time counts, and certainly there are a bit more men and more blacks in the House of Mercy group than in most of the point in time counts. I think we really need to look at why women are dying at such a young age. Part of the answer is violence. I don't have complete data on cause of death, but at least three, possibly four of the women were murdered. So up to 10% and possibly more that we don't know about died as a result of violence. I think in terms of what we need to do, I think we from my own experience working at St. Joseph's House, I've just seen it really disturbing increase in the number of women who are actually living on the streets in Rochester over the last few years. That used to be a fairly rare occurrence, but we just have more and more women coming to St. Joe's who are literally living on the streets, and that's just extremely, extremely disturbing. I think Rochester needs to pay a lot more attention to why women are living on the streets. In terms of what we need to do, there are many things. Sister Grace was very correct to bring up the issue of sanctions. So many people are sanctioned, and I think the county needs to realize, number one, the county needs to realize that they have a constitutional responsibility to care for the indigent. That's part of the New York State Constitution, is that the state has that responsibility to care for the indigent, and the state legislature delegated that responsibility not to the city but to the county. So they have the legal responsibility for folks who are homeless. The sanctions policy, a goodly percentage of the people who come to St. Joe's and the House of Mercy come because they are sanctioned. I did another small study of the calls to 211, the emergency number that were done by St. Joe's and the House of Mercy this past July, and in 34% of the calls that they made, the people were denied shelter. They were not eligible because they were sanctioned. And the sanctions can be for some fairly trivial reasons, for missing an appointment. Over the years, we've had many folks at the house, at St. Joseph's House, who work for a living, often doing day labor. When we would call up and get them an emergency placement, one of the requirements was you have to go to Department of Human Services the next morning for an appointment. Well, in some cases, these guys had a job the next morning, and their choice was either to miss their job and get fired or miss their appointment with DHS and get sanctioned. And many times folks would choose to miss the appointment with DHS. About 15 years ago, I had a friend who was staying in an emergency shelter funded by DHS. He had to go into the hospital for emergency brain surgery, which caused him to miss an appointment with DHS, which led to him being sanctioned. The fact that he was having brain surgery that day didn't seem to make any difference. So there are many many very wonderful people who work for DHS. The problem is not the people, it's the way that the system operates, and the fact that the system sanctions people often for pretty trivial actions, but that sanctioning someone can lead to their being homeless, which is a life-threatening situation, I think, as we've seen, especially during the winter months. Because of some of the flaws with the Code Blue policy. So I think we really need to address the issue of sanctions. We also need to address the issue of evictions. According to some of the court data that I've looked at, there are around 3,000 evictions annually in Rochester that reach the court level, which I suspect is the tip of the iceberg, because many evictions occur without going to court. The number of evictions and really, really needs to be reduced, because eviction is something that pretty obviously leads to homelessness, and that is something that I think the local government has some control over, particularly the use of police to evict people from their homes. You know, we could just say, unless there's a really just cause, the police are not going to evict people from their homes. That's one possibility.
All right, so these are some ideas from Professor Murray. Sister Grace Miller, the founder of the House of Mercy, they're here talking about Professor Murray's report on homelessness as death sentence, findings from the House of Mercy, and looking at the average lifespan. So we're way late for a break. We've got some of your questions coming in. I see the phone ringing. If you want to join the program, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Connections at WXXI.org, and you can find us on Twitter at MMacMedia, that's producer Megan Mack, and at Evan Dawson if you want to find us there. Short break, and we're right back with them next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, how important to Rochester is it to have the identity of being a minor league sports town? The Red Wings are in Rochester. The Rhinos could be on their way out. The Rattlers moving. And there is a real precarious moment for minor league sports and for minor league sports fans. We'll talk about what it means for our community on Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Chris in Pittsford, first on the phone. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a fan of Sister Grace. I've known her since the 90s when I was very heavily involved in government and politics. And I haven't been to the new center yet, to the new shelter, but I look forward to coming down and getting a tour. And I just want to say that the work, kind of work that Sister Grace does and others that help homeless people, to me it's the measure of what a community really is, how we treat not the least among us, but those that have the least. And I think, you know, frankly, in a city that has the legacy of Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass, I don't think we do such a great job. I agree with, I think the gentleman's name is Harry, who said that there are many good people at DHS, and there are, but I think county government could do a heck of a lot more. The city government can't do a lot more just because the city's tax base is eroding quickly. So I think it's up to Cheryl DeNolfo and the county government to do a lot more. And without Sister Grace, think of where the homeless people would be in this county. And I'll listen to comments off the phone. Thank you.
Chris, thanks for the phone call. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm glad you're in agreement with us. We really want to call on the county to help us take care of the number of homeless that are on the streets. To place a homeless person, we have to first call 211, and then they have to call us back at some time later, let us know whether or not there's a bed available. Sometimes that can take hours. I think we need to rule out the 211, and I think that the county really has just come forth and help us in any way they can to place people immediately, to get them into a shelter, or, as Harry was talking, you know, there's a shortage of housing. We try to help people get into housing, but there's a lack of housing for poor people in Rochester. And even though there are some that are supposed to be available for low income, we find when we try to get our people into low income that we can't get them in because their income level is too low. I mean, that's a disaster. That's a catastrophe. That should never be in the city. So when we hear of the housing and the housing is available for low income, We're skeptical about it. I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much for your support. And I do think the county really needs to step forward and pay attention to the poorest people in our county. We have to change the scandal for Rochester that we are one of the poorest in the country. And this goes is true for children, you know, in education, being number one, you know, in child poverty. I want to say, as far as when the women coming, there are women coming to the House of Shelter with children, and that's always hard to see. And we had a case where a woman came with her child and another woman came with her children, four children, and we couldn't place them that night, and there was no room for them. 211 said there was no room for them. So we put them in another part of the House of Mercy where they'd be separated from the homeless, but, you know, where they would be safe, we would take care of them. And we got criticized for it, you know.
Who criticized you?
The county.
For a mother and four children?
Because they said that that we can't have them in our shelter.
So you overstepped the bounds there?
We overstepped the bounds. But where were they going to go when 211 said there was no place available for them? And they're saying that we should put them into hotels. And we have put people into hotels. But then we pay for it. So if they stay in there for a week or so until they get on their feet, House of Mercy has to pay that. And I feel that the county should pay if we have to put them into hotels.
How young were the kids?
Oh, one was 6 years old. They range from, 2 years old to 6, 7 years old. One mother came in with a teenager. And we took care of, we couldn't place them. And 211 said there was no space for them, so we kept them. We got criticized for that too.
Think of all of the listeners who have young children in your families, and think about the magic that they feel this time of year and the excitement they have around the holidays. And now imagine the other side of that. Just imagine how deep the disparity is in life situation. I mean, that's just heartbreaking. So let me just ask Professor Murray to respond to some of what you heard in the call as well there from Chris. What did you think, Professor?
Well, I really appreciated Chris's call, and I think I would agree with most of what he said, certainly about the role of Sister Grace in and the House of Mercy, CW, and Sister Rita in helping folks who are homeless. I mean, they have been really the rock of Rochester for many, many years now. I think homeless folks in Rochester would be in so much worse shape if the House of Mercy were not there. And this is a problem that, you know, that has been going on for decades. When I first moved to Rochester in 1987, I remember writing an article for the paper saying we don't have enough beds for the homeless. And that has been true for 30 years, has never really changed. The county's mantra is that we have plenty of beds that might almost be the case if you assume that it's just fine to not provide any shelter for folks who are sanctioned or for folks who don't have an ID and therefore can't get processed through the system. But, you know, there have been people sleeping on the streets as long as I've been here. And I've got to say, I came from Syracuse, and in 1979, while I was there, the Catholic Worker House in Syracuse, Unity Kitchen, closed their shelter. And within a matter of months, the county government reacted. They partnered with Catholic Charities there to open a new shelter called the Oxford Inn, which at first was open just a few days a week, but pretty quickly became open 7 days a week. And it was a partnership with the county providing the salaries for two people, Henry Nicolella and Mike Sullivan, to run the shelter, and the rest was done by volunteers. And the shelter was open to only men, but to any man who came. And as a result of that partnership between the county and Catholic Charities, Syracuse has been a place with relatively little street homelessness, people actually sleeping on the street, particularly in terms of men, because they had the Oxford Inn to go to. The Oxford Inn has changed a bit and become a Catholic charity shelter where there are more limits. But my point is that other counties have done a lot more than Monroe County. Monroe County has continuously said, we're doing just fine. And I've got to say, from my experience and from my studies, that's simply not true.
Let me read a comment from Scott on Twitter who says, the social programs are good, but the individual has to do the work. If someone chooses suicide by drugs, there's not much anyone can do to help them. Sister Grace, what do you say?
Well, I hear that all the time. You know, it's blaming the homeless person or the drug addict, you know, for their problems. But as I said earlier, if we could sit down and listen to the stories, the true stories that our homeless and our poor have to tell, our hearts would be broken. Many of the problems start from childhood, early childhood. And there are many stories we could tell about the abuse that children have received in early childhood that goes through life with them. And we see it happening with the children. We see it happening with the adults. When they become adults and they keep all this inside themselves and never share it with anyone, well, you know, their lives are going to be affected by it afterwards. They are going to end up on drugs. They're looking for some hope and they don't find it, so they turn to drugs so they can forget. They want to forget the hurts in their lives, you know, the sufferings in their lives. And we tell them, you know, that, you know, taking the drug isn't going to remove that pain, that we have to deal with the pain. But many people don't learn that until later in life. They're already addicted. You know, so what happens in childhood has affected many, you know, many of them. And we hear their stories and their sad stories. And I wish more people could hear their stories. Then they wouldn't be so judgmental about drug addicts and the homeless. They wouldn't say they want to live this way. They don't want to live this way. And I think that they need to that's why we talk about the encounter, meeting with the poor and talking with them. Then you'll know their history and you know that their lives were not great and that's why they succumbed to drugs.
Okay, Professor Murray?
Yeah. People make choices, but they make choices within a set of constraints. And just to give one example, 10% of the homeless men who died were military veterans. And over the years that I've been working with folks who are homeless, a substantial proportion are veterans of wars. And I saw that when I started in the 1970s, when there were so many Vietnam veterans who were homeless. But I also met men who had been homeless since the day they were discharged from World War II, who could never get back into, quote, normal life. And many of them did use alcohol and or drugs as a way of self-medication. But in talking with them, there were so many folks who could not live with themselves after what they had been forced to do in war zones and felt that they just couldn't fit back into normal life. And I think, as Sister Grace says, knowing people's situations and knowing the alternatives that they have, some people, not all homeless people, contrary to myth, are drug addicts or mentally ill. Whether you become homeless is largely a matter of power and economics.
All right, so last question for the hour for Sister Grace. And just last night I heard one of my favorite Christmas songs. It's by Jackson Browne, and the name of the song is The Rebel Jesus. And the song is about materialism this time of year. And I just want to read a little bit from the lyrics, because you brought up Pope Francis and the World Day of the Poor and some of these themes. I just want to get your thoughts on what you think the actual Jesus of Nazareth might say about inequality. Jackson Browne writes in the song The Rebel Jesus, which is a beautiful song, by the way, "We guard our world with locks and guns, and we guard our fine possessions. And once a year when Christmas comes, we give to our relations. And perhaps we'll give a little to the poor if the generosity should seize us. But if any one of us should interfere in the business of why they are poor, they'll get the same as the rebel Jesus." He is saying we've got to really look at who Jesus was and what the message is here when we are out stuffing department store boxes into our cars this time of year and think about the people at the House of Mercy. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think so often I'll give a talk and hoping that we can get some money, you know, for the House of Mercy to continue to perform our ministry. And when I'm all finished, very often I hear, well, could you use clothing? Can you use socks and things like that? Well, yes, we could, but we could use much more than that. If we truly know Jesus, in the Gospels, Jesus was a rebel. And that's why he was crucified, because he went against the law, the law of the authorities, and he did what needed to be done. He changed the laws that oppressed people. He changed them. We know there were women caught in adultery. But if you look at the Gospels and you think of Matthew 25, what does Jesus say? I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. Well, if it takes a rebel to do that, then we're going to be rebels and follow the Jesus who was a rebel.
The song is The Rebel Jesus. Listen to that. If you haven't heard that before, it's by Jackson Brown. It's a beautiful song, but it's got it really makes you think about the message and what we do this time of year. And I want to thank Professor Harry Murray, the author of the report, which we've posted in various platforms for you to read, Homelessness as Death Sentence. Thank you, Professor, for being here and sharing this with us.
Thank you.
And Sister Grace Miller from the House of Mercy, continued great work for the people who truly need it most. Thanks for the work that you and everyone there does.
Well, thank you very much.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Audrey Sample, intern, Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we're back with you Tuesday on Member-Supported Public Radio.